sons and daughters favor the bold, and you are cordially invited in the pale moonlight. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk, and today we are doing a review of Season 6, Episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way up to 26. We're doing a full Season 6 review, and it's going to be so much fun. Sirach, you looked at me like, wait, what episode are you saying?
It's a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
This is a good 40-hour review.
Oh, dear. I honestly don't even know where to start, but let's just start with this. Sirach, what did you think of Season 6 as a whole?
As a whole, I was entertained by it, very well entertained by it as a whole. Mm-hmm. There were, you know, good episodes, bad episodes in the normal kind of ebb and flow of a show. But for the most part, I think the things that I felt about the Dominion War, because the hype and anticipation for the Dominion War finally started to kind of kick in this season. And, you know, starting off with the occupation and seeing how it kind of unfolds from there has been pretty fun for me.
You know, that's so crazy. You mentioned the Dominion War, because when people think about the Dominion War, it kind of went on for like three seasons, right? But there was a specific part of it when they were in direct conflict with the Dominion, and they abandoned or left Deep Space Nine, and they went off on the Defiant, and Kieran Odo and you and others stayed on Deep Space Nine. And we think of that as like the quintessential Dominion War. And two things that are strange about that. One is that it was only a 6-episode arc, but it felt like so much more because they did so much in there. And secondarily, that was the beginning of the 6th season. That was this season ago. It feels like so much has happened since then, that like, it's just crazy to think that all that has happened in the 6th season. The Defiant left Deep Space Nine as basically the last scene of Season 5.
Right.
And it's just mind-blowing how much they did in 26 episodes.
Yeah, and it's actually, when you put it the way that you just put it, it's interesting to think of how much of an impact that the Dominion storyline and the Dominion War essentially is one of the things that embodies what DS9 is about. So when you think of Deep Space Nine, you're going to think of this whole war between the, you know, the Federation and the Founders and the Vorta and the Jem'Hadar and the, you know, the whole Cardassian connection and all of these things. So they set it up so great throughout the first 5 seasons. They made me care about all these characters. They gave guys like Zial and his daughter, for example, started off in this season kind of building up on that storyline and expanding on that story, which became, you know, central to seeing the breakdown of Dukat eventually after, you know, her story emerges and she dies and whatnot. So all of these things happening in this year, they really built out on so many different characters and gave us more development for guys like Nog, for guys like Damar, for guys like even Dukat had an expanded kind of insight into what his life was like and what his psyche was going through. So much happened in this season. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned there were some good episodes and there were some bad episodes, because that's true. There were a couple that were a little below the watermark, right? The Deep Space Nine watermark. Well, let's go through all these one by one, kind of touch on some, speed through a couple others. The first one was A Time to Stand, and that was the first episode, you know, that's the description is that a synopsis, borrowing a captured Jem'Hadar attack ship, Sisko and crew embark on a mission to destroy the hidden base where all the Ketracel White is stored for the entire Alpha Quadrant. God, I can't believe this stuff feels so long ago, does it?
Like, right, wow. Right. They gave us a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and I this one was great.
Ketracel White. Man, this is a great episode. First of all, the first thing in my notes was Brandon Tartikoff. I remember that in the credits, they had this episode dedicated to Brandon Tartikoff.
Yes.
And the significance and the impact of what he meant to Deep Space Nine. He, you know, he is one of the founding fathers of the Deep Space Nine as an idea in itself, along with Michael Piller and Rick Berman. But thanks to Tartikoff's contribution and his influence and his persistence, Deep Space Nine existed. So, you know, when he passed away, they dedicated this season, which is a great season to dedicate in the kickoff first episode, by saying, hey, this is a guy that brought you this show, and now we're going to take it up a notch and start accelerating the drama in this season. So that was the first thing that I noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was one in which Garrick kind of proves himself to be useful because, you know, Captain Sisko's complaint about headaches because that little visual thing that he has to look through. And then Garrick says that his physiology is closer to Jem'Hadar. And so he tries it on. So he becomes useful. And, you know, this is where Nog also proves his usefulness and provides some skill and acumen. It just kind of opens the door for just expansion of characters and expansion of story. And it was really, I mean, this kind of stuff is so memorable in hindsight.
I wrote down here, favorite line from this episode is Dukat when he says, you know, my people have lost their way. I made them strong again. I could make things very pleasant for you, Kira. And Kira's response was, you could start by doing something about your breath. It was just like,
sick burn, dude.
Burn.
Ooh, she got you, Dukat. You may have slaughtered thousands of people, but she just made you look pretty dumb.
Yeah, that was my line from this episode.
All right. And that one was well received by the fans, of course. The second one was Rocks and Shoals. Sisko and his crew crash on a barren world when their commandeered Jem'Hadar ship is shot down. They encounter Jem'Hadar, who crashed there earlier, and have taken Nog and Garrick hostage in exchange for medical aid for their Vorta overseer. I remember that. That was when Nog and Garrick kind of had their moments together. That was really cool. That was obviously two favorite characters. And quite possibly the first time we've actually seen them interact, and it did not disappoint.
Yes, they made a very good kind of tandem, both distrustful of the other, which I thought was a great play, right?
Yeah.
I think Garrick said, I'm not turning my back on you again or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Love the back and forth between the two of them. It felt genuine. It felt well-deserved because neither one of them have earned the other's trust, you know, at this point. We had barely seen the two of them together.
And they're both such interesting characters in that they're both kind of the outsiders. You know, Nog is a part of the crew by choice as an outsider. Garrick is a part of the crew, not so much by choice, but because out of exile. But it's really cool when you see, you know, Garrick talking to Quark or Nog talking to Garrick or these kind of outside points of view that are usually given us a different point of view, but two different points of view then squaring off against each other is always really interesting.
Another thing that I remember about this episode, two things. Number one, the Vorta that was in this episode was a fantastic actor. I think his name was Christopher Shea. Played Keevan. I'm not sure, but that's what I'm having my notes. This was directed by Michael Vahar.
Yeah, Keevan, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Keevan. The Board, a very great performance by this actor, Christopher Shea, who guest starred. Also, Phil Morris was in this, played the Jemadar.
Love the, Phil Morris. That guy's a legend.
Yeah. Yes. So those are the two also highlights, also with Michael Behar, who's a favorite of ours in the cast for the, mm-hmm. the fact that not only he's a great director, but, you know, we worked a lot alongside his son, who was also part of the camera department. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I think you started to say Phil Morris's character name, Ramataclan.
Ramataclan, yes.
Sounds like one of the bad guy Transformers, right? Ramataclan, transform and get the Autobots or whatever.
Yeah. Also, there was another moment in this episode where Sisko, this is the beginning of Nog on the Bridge too, right? At mm-hmm. the Defiant, and kind of him and Sisko going back and forth. A lot of Sisko Nog in the beginning of this season and in along the whole season. But one of the moments was when Sisko tells Nog, "This isn't a vote." I think Nog yes. tried to come in there.
Especially not from a cadet. FYI. Yeah. FYI, yeah. He might listen to Chief O'Brien, but
yeah, you just got here.
The next episode was called Sons and Daughters. Serving with his recruit son aboard a Klingon vessel, that's Alexander, Worf finds his relationship with his son strained. Meanwhile, strained relationships abound on Deep Space Nine between Major Kira and Gul Dukat. That was over Zial, of course. God, it's right. This is so reminiscent. I'm reading this stuff and I'm like, it's almost like reading about the good old days. You know, I'm like, it was just 5 months ago, but it feels like,
I know. So much stuff. It's so much stuff in just one season. This feels like it would be five seasons. This one season feels like it would be five seasons mm-hmm. of some of the new shows that are out. Because they squeeze so much stuff.
Yeah, this was when Zial was showing them her paintings. And Dukat right. was starting to think that this was like going to turn into a little bit more, you know, such good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this episode. This is where we had Alexander Roshenko, Worf's son, was kind of an, incompetent guy.
But then he kind of became like their mascot, you know?
Right. He kind of earned the tribal respect as whatever his role was, as the jokey guy, the guy who would mess things up. But I also wrote that for my episode, my summation for this one was bad dads.
Yes.
And that was because, Dukat had bought that dress for Kira and then she, then regifted it to his daughter. He's like, yes, I bought this for you.
I was like, what a jerk. Yeah, he just doesn't want to waste.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Actually what we called this episode, everybody, if you'll notice, we called it Redemption for Bad Dads, but with a question mark. Like, is it redemption? Because Worf was kind of a bad dad and Dukat was kind of a bad dad. Sisko, on the other hand, is on the other side of that spectrum. He's a pretty good dad. I think we
pretty
all agree
good dad.
On that. But that was funny when you said, I remember when you first said, this episode was all about bad dads, like spot on.
The
next one was,
by the way, really quickly, directed by Jesus Trevino.
Yes.
And the reason I bring that up is because once again, we talked when we've had the interview with Joe Menendez.
I thought the
director,
same.
The Picard episode that we reviewed, that also he mentioned being in the line of a very few Latino directors. And just to highlight, Jesus Trevino was directing this particular episode. And I mentioned Mike Behar, but I'm not sure about Behar's
so funny.
Background.
I thought the same thing. I literally, when we just said Michael Behar, it triggered the thought of what Joe Menendez said, which he said he believes he was the third Hispanic director. And when I said Michael Behar, I was like, I wonder if Behar is one, but I kind of just kept that in the back of my mind. And then when we said we saw Jesus Trevino, then I was like, oh, okay, I know that guy's got to be one.
Yeah,
right. So maybe that's all three right there, or maybe Michael Behar is not, but I thought the exact same thing, because it's great when people point something out and it just sticks with you. And then when you see other things, it reminds you of that. It brings it you back to what you. This guy said. Yeah.
Right. And so I know Jesus Trevino has got to qualify with that name and his background. So
I wonder if anybody calls him Chewy.
We don't know how many of the one or two or three or four, you know, Menendez said he believed there was three, but we're not sure how many total, mm-hmm. but we know that, you know, DS9 did represent on their end. So,
they did.
Shout out to the guys.
Episode 4 was Behind the Lines. This was LeVar Burton that directed this. Speaking of great directors, after forming an attack plan on the Dominion, Sisko relinquishes command of the Defiant to Dax after accepting a promotion. That's right. On Deep Space Nine, the Resistance faces Discovery when Odo links with another changeling. Wait, the Resistance faces faces being discovered when Odo links with another changeling. Yeah, remember he was supposed to do something to, you know, whatever it was as part of their plan, but instead he was out busy, you know, doing the humpies with the female changeling until Rom got caught. Ugh. And everybody was so pissed at Odo.
That was when Odo was out just mindlessly gallivanting with this liquid girl and just completely blowing it with Kira and just messing it up altogether.
Kira was getting so jealous.
I don't blame her. It wasn't just the jealousy part. It was the fact that he was letting them down in his contribution to the Resistance, which was like, you know, not responsible of him, especially.
He felt betrayed. Absolutely.
Yeah. I would have, all of us. I mean, Rom probably felt betrayed the most. He was about to die. Yeah. You know, he's facing execution. But I also remember a few good moments in this. One was when Wei-Yun was telling Dukat, keep your voice down. Smile, Dukat. And he says, I am smiling.
I am smiling. It's good stuff.
Great scene. Yeah, good stuff.
Let's go over to Favor the Bold, another amazing one. That should be like a Ruffles flavor. Flavor the Bold. Patent pending. This one, the synopsis here is Sisko mounts an attack to retake Deep Space Nine while Rom faces charges as an enemy of the Dominion state. We're already back to Deep Space Nine. They haven't gotten it back, but they're already coming back to it. So much, it's just crazy. This is just the fifth episode of season six, but so much happened, and the thing resolves by episode six, if I remember correctly. But I don't know, anything jump out at you on that episode?
Wei-Yun here was wonderful in this episode. Also, shout out to the fact that a guy like Rom, who was such a, you know, is getting so much story in this season, right? We talk about how the writers on DS9 really grow the characters and don't just focus on the, you know, the cast members. They actually focus on the reoccurring guest members and everybody else who's a part of this family, and they grow their storylines as well. So this is just about expanding on that. We see Zial obviously now, like in the second, third episode in a row. We see more Rom. So just really good stuff.
Yeah, and episode six was Sacrifice of Angels, which is a fitting name because we lose Zial in this episode. We also happen to have an amazing guest for that episode, if you'll recall. Melanie Smith, who played Zial, joined us. This was the perfect episode for her to join us. I mean, she may have had a bigger role in one or two previous episodes, but this was the one where her storyline ends. So it was great to have her to speak on her character's entire story arc. And she was such a wonderful guest. This was a great episode.
Yeah, it was a great episode. It was kind of a little tearjerker, that scene between, you know, when she does die. The interview that she gave was fantastic. She actually mentioned that she had never died on screen before and she was looking forward to it. Which was cool. Kind of pretty cool, right?
Give me a good death.
Yeah. also remember, I think Damara arrested the security resistance guys, and he says, you know, you have nothing to hide, do you?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think if I'm not mistaken, Sisko was referred to in a prophecy, in a wormhole kind of prophets talking with him. They called him the Sisko. And it just every time I hear the Sisko, it's one of my favorite things too.
I love it. I love it. It is so Deep Space Nine. It's such a Deep Space Nine thing to say the Sisko, just like my child. You say those things and people are like, yes, you know, exactly. You know, Deep Space Nine. It's just, I don't know what it is, but it's just so Deep Space Nine. Also, forgot to mention that episode one, we also had a special guest. Noah A.K. joined us for season 6, episode 1, which was funny because he said he was kind of like in the middle of season 5 with his wife.
Right.
And so he skipped ahead real quick to watch episode 1 of season 6 with us. So that was great. We love Noah, and that was really cool to have him join us there. The next one was, of course, you are cordially invited. This is when we finally have retaken Deep Space Nine, right, and we can, you know, put our hair down, let our hair down and exhale and have a fun episode. This is the infamous Nog dance episode.
Yes.
It says, suddenly desiring to wed within the week on Deep Space Nine, Worf and Jadzia go through their own Klingon rituals, Worf on a 4-day bachelor party with the male members. That was hilarious. And Jadzia deals with her prospective mother-in-law, who totally opposes the idea of an alien marrying into her Klingon household. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah. Very fun. Definitely remember the Nog dance, one of the great things of this episode. I also remember the kind of hell that they were trying to put Dax through with all the Klingon, the mother-in-law.
Where she was holding the thing out, the heavy buckets.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just like, it was indicative of the kind of things that people face when they're marrying into other cultures or ethnicities. There's sometimes a rite of passage that you have to kind of prove yourself worthy of being accepted by the culture or ethnicity. So, and I thought that one of the great lines in this episode was Dax saying, "I don't beg." She's like, "I don't beg," you know?
And, yes, I remember that one. You can actually picture her saying it because it's such an iconic moment. The face that she makes and the way she looks at her, and then she goes right back to lifting those things up. Good stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff. Next one was Resurrection. If you don't recognize this one by the name, and I don't, you read the synopsis and you go, oh yeah. Major Kira takes a romantic interest in the mirror universe counterpart of her deceased lover, Baril, after he transports himself into her universe and onto Deep Space Nine. And what's funny is, I bet there's a lot of people that are listening in that are like, Resurrection. As soon as I read that, they go, oh yeah. Oh, that one, Baril, huh? Yeah, that one wasn't too well received by the fans. I thought it was fine. I think all of these are fine. Even the ones that people hate, like when you watch them nowadays, you're like, they're not that bad. They're fun. They're enjoyable. It's more Star Trek, you know?
Yeah, this is the evil Kira is in this. Is that the episode with her? And
yes, you're right. Yeah, Mirror Universe. So you like this episode.
Yes, there was a lot of resurrections going on.
Yeah, resurrections.
Yeah, it was a great episode. Evil Kira, I always love the intendant, you know. And, you know, it's nothing else to say except she's amazing. And when she's able to just cover all of these dynamic performances that that she does. So the Not Visitor is amazing, as usual.
Oh, we got to run to a break real quick, everybody. So stick around. We'll be right back on The Seventh Rule with more goodies.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Welcome back to The Seventh Rule, everybody. We are doing our season 6 review. And the next episode is Statistical Probabilities. A group of genetically engineered humans are brought to Dr. Bashir on Deep Space Nine in hopes of integrating them with the rest of the universe. The moral of that story, if I recall, was you guys, they thought that Federation had no chance of winning, but he's like, but you guys are imperfect. Even your statistics are imperfect because you forgot to calculate yourselves into this equation. That was a really good message. I really liked that final message there.
Yeah. I remember these quirky people that were, one thing I had, the tidbit that I had was they were given all of this access to all of this information that was basically classified Starfleet information.
Should have been, yeah.
Right. And they were just like, oh, yeah, we're saying you're going to lose. But I did like the moral of that, which is basically, you don't surrender because you think you're going to lose. You don't go into something with the mindset that you're going to lose. You have to have the confidence that you think you can win. And that's,
or as Kevin Garnett would say. Listen, pretend I'm holding
a basketball
instead of a baseball. Yeah. Anything is possible. 90% of our audience is like, I have no idea what these guys are talking about.
Yeah.
That one goes out to Neil Stevens. Neil Stevens knows what I'm talking about there. He gets it. Episode 10, which aired on January 1st, New Year's Day of 1998. The Magnificent Ferengi, at the request of the Grand Negus, Quark puts together a mission to rescue Quark's mother, who is in the hands of the Dominion. That one was another one that it was more fun to watch than I remember. Like from when I watched it 20 years ago to when I watched it now, I was like, this was a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
And I remember that I think Ira joined us for this episode.
That's exactly it, yeah.
And gave us kind of a rundown on the whole Magnificent Seven and some of the inspirations for where this
and
episode
was. And how
it
was going to be Grand Negus Zek. It was going to be Wallace Shawn instead, but he was not available, so they switched it to be Ishka.
Right. Really cool stuff. I also remember Iggy Pop was in this episode.
And, oh, yeah.
And, you know, Ira's big on his Iggy Pop, so we have to always shout him out.
That's my favorite soda.
it was a space Western, you know, that's what it really was.
Yeah. And in our rush to go to our break, I forgot to mention that we had a couple other guests. In episode 7, you are cordially invited. Of course, we had the incredible Terry Farrell join us for that iconic episode. That was so good. And I remember her, you know, explaining how she felt in that episode and us just lathering her with compliments because of how great her performance was. But that was really cool to have her. We love Terry. She's one of the coolest humans ever. And it was great to have her. Also, Episode 8, the one right after that, was the guest was Michael Taylor, who wrote that episode as well as several others or a few others that were really, really good, if you recall.
I do remember that. And I also remember this was Resurrection that he wrote.
Yeah.
He said it wasn't necessarily his favorite. You know, he said he had other ones, I think, that he wanted that he thought better up.
Yeah, which was cool.
It was good.
For him to join. He also wrote the script for In the Pale Moonlight.
Right.
And he got a written by credit for The Visitor. So he gets a pass for everything from here on out. The Visitor and In the Pale Moonlight. That's it. You're good to go. You know what I mean?
You're good.
Yeah.
You're good.
let's see. What was the next episode? Let me pull that up real quick.
Number 11, which is Waltz.
Oh, great one. After being attacked by Cardassian forces, Sisko gets stranded with a very psychotic Gul Dukat, who is being transported to his trial. Meanwhile, the crew of the Defiant races to rescue survivors.
Yes. We felt like, or at least I did, I felt like this episode was like a duet episode.
Absolutely.
It was the, you know, and they actually named it Waltz. So, you know, the duet, the waltz, it's totally. It's similar in the naming and also in the style of episode, which are both great episodes, by the way, because they deal with two people who believe that they are right about something and they use their own justification for their actions.
And I feel like the underlying theme for both is that the person, the Cardassian in this case, was kind of on trial. It was a metaphor for that person being on trial outside of a court. It's kind of like being on trial with your peers or in public opinion. They're both like that. And that person was defending themselves, and Kira or Sisko was kind of the prosecutor or the judge, you know, and it was just, those are magical episodes.
Yes. This episode was directed by René Auberjonois.
Nice.
And it was very, I mean, you know, you always know when an episode's bad. This is how I can tell how an episode is extremely good, is when I don't have any space to write any more notes on the page.
You're out of space. I love it.
Yeah, I'm out of space. And I got to, like, you know, like sideline it on the edge here, you know, and turn the paper sideways.
No more space. No more deep. No more nine. You got none of it.
That's it.
Okay. Next one was Who Mourns for Morn? A former patron of Quark's bequeaths everything to him. That's a very short synopsis. Pretty funny. Mark O'Connell, the writer, joined us. Story by credit for him. This was a fun one because we got a whole episode about Morn.
Yeah. And turns out Morn's got money. Lots of it.
September Morn.
Very good episode. And they gave us the whole little wild goose chase treasure map to, you know, find the riches of Morn. I loved it. It was a good episode. It was fun.
But let's go ahead and just admit to ourselves, we're just in a race to get to the next one, which is Far Beyond the Stars, directed by a little known actor director known as Mr. Avery Brooks. I think you might have heard of him.
Oh yeah. This is gold standard for DS9 and on all of Star Trek and pretty much television in general. So I don't think there's much to say except for what a great episode, a classic, and probably one of my best, the best episode that I can think of, or at least one of them.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of those episodes where it's like, what else can we say? There's no angle to hit this at, or no interesting observation. You know it's one of the best. I know it's one of the best. Everybody knows it's one of the best. We all get it. What else is there to say? We had a guest that day, which was Ira Stephen Bear, and he was amazing. Melissa was a guest as well, part of the show. She was a part of a lot of shows because Nog was in a lot of these. This time he was a paperboy, and he wasn't Nog. He was paperboy guy. But Ira, of course, was his usual eloquent self. I don't know what else to say, but this is one that I'll remember forever, you know?
You can never watch it enough times. It always hits home when you watch it. I think the climactic performance with Avery having his breakdown in the office.
It was real.
It was real and as good as it gets. And in closing for this episode, I would say that I would easily say, if you want to watch Star Trek and you don't want to know anything about
spaceships and aliens,
spaceships, you don't have to know about phasers and teleportation and all of this stuff. You don't have to know anything about beaming things up and engine cores. Just watch this episode as a good ride and a good story that anybody can enjoy outside of sci-fi fans as well.
Could be a Twilight Zone episode. It could be a Black Mirror episode. It's just the story is what really makes this one happen. The next one was One Little Ship. A Dominion attack on the Defiant endangers Dax, Bashir, and O'Brien aboard the runabout USS Rubicon as they enter an anomaly that shrinks them to a very minute size. Unfortunately, they were being held stable by the Defiant within a tractor beam, which was discontinued during the attack. Boy, that was a confusing synopsis, but we remember this one. This is when there's the little tic-tac Defiant flying around and buzzing around in everybody's ear. That was a fun one. That, I feel like that was an episode that they must have tinkered around with for a long time. And they're like, how do we make this work? And they finally were just like, let's just do it.
Yeah, it was there was the era of Ghostbusters and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and all of this stuff.
Inner space.
Inner space. So it was along the lines of the kind of stories that they were being told in that era. They just applied it to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun one. It was just a fun episode all around. This was the one where at the very end, Worf like looks inside the ship and Dax is like, hi. And Miles like, hey. Oi. Next one was Honor Among Thieves. This was episode 15. And we had a Star Trek documentarian and hilarious dude, Brian Volkweis, joining us. So cool having him on the show. And I'm glad he was on the show for this specific episode, because otherwise, Sirach, it would be like you explaining everything to me by yourself. At least this way, there are two of you guys explaining things. Because I'm like, these mobster movies, I can't. They're not. I don't get it, you know, but you guys recognized it. You're like, don't worry, Ryan, we'll walk you through it, dummy.
And I had been telling you about Donnie Brasco and all these mafia movies. And then here we get to see it in action. Once again, 90s, a lot of the stuff was Bronx Tale and Goodfellas and all that stuff was coming out. So this is along the lines of the themes of television and movies that were coming out. And then we also got, the Orion Syndicate working for the Dominion. A lot of that stuff was explained. So it was good stuff. And I walked away from this saying how amazing Call of Meany is. So shout out to Call of Meany.
Brian must suffer at least one episode a season. They have an O'Brien must suffer episode. The next one was episode 16, Change of Heart. Worf and Jadzia travel to the Badlands to procure some information on the Dominion from a traitorous Cardassian. Bashir wants to engage in a holosuite spy simulation, but O'Brien prefers to brush up on his Tongo game after watching Jadzia lose to Quark. That's right. That was when the B plot kind of had no resolution. It was like a weird no resolution thing, but this was the one where you think, is Dax going to die here? Like for real? Like, is this, you know, a lot of times they kind of act like somebody's going to die, but this one actually felt like she might, you know?
Yes. And there were some good lines in this episode. Mm-hmm. One of them was, don't work your brain, Klingon, which I thought was hilarious. Commander Boring, another one.
Hey, zip. We also had as a special guest, the director of this episode, David Livingston, who is, you know, a legend among Star Trek fans because of how many episodes he's produced and directed, the most ever episodes directed for Star Trek. And I remember every single compliment we paid him, he deflected to somebody else. We're like, what a great choice. Yeah. Like, oh, that was the DP. Oh, what a great moment. Oh, it was the writers. Oh, what? Oh no, that was the actor. We're like, dude, you did something. We know you can't hide. We know you're good at what you do, man.
You've only directed more episodes than even Jonathan Frakes, which is saying something. Mm-hmm. David is a sweetheart. He has such a wealth of knowledge about Star Trek from its beginnings to now. And he was very gracious to come on, and he's always very gracious to deflect any kind of praise because he's just a humble person, but he knows what he's doing. He comes with a game plan. He does all the preparation, and by the discussions and conversation we had with him, we saw the kind of preparation that he puts into. He phrases out every shot is, you know, worked out.
It's a pro.
He knows what he wants to do. And that's why he's always working.
And he was also a supervising producer, I believe, in so many episodes, like 100 or something or more. Right. He was also good enough to join us for the virtual TrekCon Lappy Awards and present some an award live, as well as accept an award with some other Deep Space Nine people, yourself included. So he's David Livingston. Shout out to him. Awesome guy. Really appreciate him. The next one was Wrongs Darker Than Death or Night. This was episode 17. After receiving some disturbing information from Gul Dukat, Major Kira seeks Sisko's approval as emissary to travel back in time. If you could have done this, why didn't you do this in every episode? Travel back in time and I don't know, in time to find out the truth about her mother. This episode didn't sit well with a lot of people, you know, for various reasons. Sometimes because, you know, it triggered emotions that they didn't want to be feeling. Sometimes because they didn't think that Kira would have acted this way. Others because some people thought it was just really crazy to just kill your mom or be willing to kill your mother, you know, and there was just so much in this episode.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff. And like you said about the time travel, just time travel in general, if it's not done a certain way, people are automatically turned off by it. Because like you say, if you can use it at any point, then why wouldn't Sisko time travel and get Jennifer Sisko back? Why wouldn't, you could just keep going down the line. Why wouldn't they get Dax back when she dies? Why wouldn't you just, you know, constantly use this time travel capability if all you have to do is, you know, see an orb or swing around a planet or whatever it is. So it has to be done in a
swing around a planet, the Superman reference.
Wouldn't you like to swing on a star?
That's the one. I remember that one.
She did see the orb of time, and I had problems with her being willing to kill her mom. I know she's a tough girl, but that's just too much.
That's hardcore. Also directed by Jonathan West, which explained all the great shots and the amazing lighting in that episode. Good stuff there. We also had next 18 was Inquisition. This was the introduction to Section 31. Finally, Dr. Bashir's plans to attend a medical conference at a breezy resort are canceled when Starfleet Intelligence boards Deep Space Nine, suspecting the doctor of treason. This was, to me, it's just the introduction to Section 31 that makes this one so great.
The thing that I walked away was the guest star William Sadler was in this episode.
Yeah.
And he's fantastic. We just talked about William Sadler not too long ago. Mm-hmm. This is him in this episode. And also that the teddy bear made a appearance, a teddy bear. Bashir's teddy bear. I forgot his name.
Yeah. Right now, everybody's yelling it at their screen right now. In the comments below, tell us what Bashir's... It's
right on my head.
Kukalaka.
Yeah, that's right.
Chocolata.
How come I didn't write
that? Mocha Chocolata. Yeah. It's like a Hawaiian name, it sounds like, or something.
Kukulaka. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, we had William Sadler join us just a little while later. Which was also amazing. William Sadler. What a guy. What a guy.
What a guy.
What history with what he's done. Hey, Death himself, or the Grim Reaper himself, I should say, in Bill and Ted movies.
Section 31 is the big takeaway, though, for that episode.
Yeah. The next episode was In the Pale Moonlight. Now, we don't need to talk about this one either. This is just only one of the best episodes in the history of television. I mean, hey, whatever.
Yeah, with probably the best monologue I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. In television, at least it's got to be up there, you know, in the top three. That last scene with Sisko, delete the log. This is that episode, right?
Yeah, computer, delete entire personal log.
Mm. Yeah,
this was the highest rated Star Trek episode ever.
Yeah, and also a Michael Taylor, Peter Allen Fields, Michael Taylor written
masterpiece
story, directed by Victor Lobel.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's just really nothing to say here except for Garrick and Sisko just both gave some of the best performances of this series.
Yeah.
I love the line when Garrick is telling Sisko, you used me to do the things that you knew you couldn't do. And the way he was saying that to him was just suspenseful and top of the line performances by both gentlemen.
And that is where this came from here. Everybody stay tuned for this.
It's a J. Yes. Yes.
This is Scott Jensen's skill put this idea to fruition. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Jake.
It's a Jake. But, you know, we also see in this episode that Garrick is willing to risk his life for a greater good of some sort. And he's done that several times now in this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Garrick, not enough superlatives to describe Garrick and Andy Robinson. Now, the next one was His Way. We had we hit the jackpot here. We had Ira Stephen Bear join us and Nana Visitor join us for this one episode. And it was a great episode. It was a lot of fun. And the insights that Nana and Ira brought us just add so much depth to the history of Star Trek. Like, it's kind of like a making of Star Trek documentary or something. It's really amazing.
It is. We got to find out about, number one, Ira's love for the whole Rat Pack, Vic Fontaine type of music. His connection with Frank Sinatra Jr. and how he was trying to kind of weave all of this together.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also had, if I'm not mistaken, Kira doing a very beautiful song in this episode as well.
Yeah.
Thiva. So yeah, it was a great episode.
Yeah. Next, episode 21, we had The Reckoning. Now, The Reckoning is the plot is spiritualists on Bajor summon Captain Sisko to the planet's surface, where they show him a stone tablet of some unknown inscriptions. Once on DS9, the inscription reveals an ancient prophecy of coming disasters surrounding the wormhole, Bajor, and Deep Space Nine, as those around him voice their uneasiness about Sisko being an emissary for the planet. Wow, that's a mouthful. this was one of those episodes. I feel like you remember it, but you don't remember. I don't remember many of the details about it. I just kind of remember the overall, where you go, oh yeah, this was the one where they brought the thing back and Kai Winn was there. Yeah. 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 I remember that one, you know?
Yeah.
It was good. It was fun. It was an easy watch.
Yeah, I remember this episode because Sisko breaks the tablets and those paw wraiths come flying out, and which we'll see later on in this season. The same thing happens with Dukat and the paw wraiths.
Well, don't skip the best part, which is
I won't skip
Jake Sisko becoming a paw wraith.
Right.
That's the key takeaway there. Jake Sisko with his red eyes. You needed that Visine that day, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. I remember this episode. I did think that Sisko was wrong for taking the artifact away from Bajor. This was also so Kai Winn for the first time was actually kind of right about something when she filed the grievance about him removing the artifact.
Don't let her hear that.
I hate to say it, but this was also a Jesus Trevino directed episode.
I noticed that as well. Good stuff there. The next one was Valiant. This was, to me, a lot of people for some reason don't really like this episode. It kind of doesn't get as high of marks as I think it deserves. But to me, I always liked this episode because I always liked the reason this episode came to being, the backstory of this. And I thought it was great. I've always liked it.
I've always liked it too. I actually liked it when we were doing it. Red Squad. I felt like there was a story there about Nah getting carried away, being too ambitious, being overly it's that peer pressure. I think it was about peer pressure. It was also about Nog kind of having been ostracized in Starfleet, coming up, you know, at the academy, finally getting to be a part of the cool kids, and Jake kind of hitting him over the head, like, your desire to be part of the cool kids is ruining your judgment. I thought that was a great episode. I like that it was about the young cadets. It was kind of like the academy, as closest to the academy that we got on our show.
Yeah.
So I liked it.
I've always remembered that as an episode I like, and some people don't. I think it's great.
Another Mike Vahar directed episode.
Right. Really quick. We're gonna have to look up Michael Vahar and see what's going on there. See, we're trying to figure out these mystery people now. The next one was Prophet and Lace, which is another one that kind of like is all over the place with fandom. But Chase Masterson came on. She joined us, talked about how much she enjoyed doing it. It was so much fun. She kind of stole the show. Rom definitely stole the show. Those were my takeaways, was just how fun Lita and Rom were in this episode.
Yeah. Also, we had the Grand Nagus in this episode. We had Moody in this episode.
Yeah.
We had Slug of Cola, the slimiest cola in the galaxy.
Yeah.
So, this was a fun episode. You know, when you look back on it, the overall, you know, we got into the details about it, about, you know, whether things were believable or they should have went this way or done this. But overall, it left a fun residue in the aftertaste.
Yum. The next one, episode 24, was Time's Orphan. The chief's daughter gets caught in a time displacement, and when they get her back, she is considerably older. This is where Molly just comes back savage and hopping around and doing all this stuff, and then she's like, you know what, I just want to go back and to being alone and doing cartwheels in the grass, please. It all works out.
And O'Brien's like, yeah, all right, just go. I'm tired of seeing you now. It's been a week already. You're driving me crazy.
We've been trying to get you to be nice for 2.5 days. Forget it. We're sick of you. But it was fine. It was cool. It was great to have a Molly episode, you know? We also then had episode 25 was The Sound of Her Voice, as the Defiant races to a shipwrecked officer who is days away. The crew keeps in contact with her. Meanwhile, Jake follows Quark's latest scheme for story research. This is a unique episode because they've never really done an episode like this before. This is one of those standalone episodes, because a lot of other episodes, they remind you of something from a different series or something like that. This was like a kind of a standalone one, you know, and it's unique, and I really liked it.
I liked it too. I thought it was like a Twilight Zone episode, reminded me of a Twilight Zone kind of storyline where somebody's talking from the past, but the sounds in the present, this whole thing. I also thought it was a good way for them to get into the minds of characters and have very personal conversations with this imaginary person, because, you know, people feel comfortable confiding in people that they feel like there won't be any blowback or repercussion from. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a great tool. And it allowed us to kind of get into the mind of O'Brien and Bashir and Sisko. Really good episode. I liked it.
And then episode 26.
Oh, that was Deborah Wilson too, playing the voice. Yes. The Sound of Her Voice.
Good to bring Deborah that up. Wilson. We also had Tears of the Prophets, the final episode. There are a lot of things that happen in this episode, but of course, everybody will just remember it as the episode where Jadzia dies. And kind of a shocking thing, I don't think people were ready for it when it first happened in 1998. We're ready for it now. We knew it was going to happen. Yeah. But it was still like, it's still forever the episode where Jadzia dies.
Yeah, I knew she dies at some point, and I knew it was at some point in before season 7. I just didn't know it would be now, the last episode, and in this kind of fashion. Was very sad to see her go out. Would have liked to see her been caught up in more of a heroic type of situation. But that was my big takeaway from this episode, was the end of Kira.
Yeah.
I mean, of Dax.
The end of an era. So, yeah. But that's what we thought, everybody. Next, we're going to have the free-for-all. You're going to hear what more people think. Smarter people. We just talk about stuff that we like. What do we know? So we're going to hit that free-for-all right now, everybody. But before we do, we want to give a very special thanks to Homer Frizzell in... Okay, here we go. Homer Frizzell in Walter Koenig's former apartment building in Manhattan or somewhere in New York. Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, Eve England out in Wales. Yvette Blackman, Tom, Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet, TJ, Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Timothy Baum, Bill Victor Arukin, John Mann, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Darlena Marie Tierney, C. Deekman, Rex A. Wood, Anil O. Palat, Anna Post, Dr. Frank Sobozhensky. That's the one. Patrick David Lindsley, Joe Balsarati, and of course, everybody knows Dr. Susan V. Gruner. Thank you all. Stick around for the free-for-all. We'll be right back. And always remember the seventh rule.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Everybody's giggling for some reason. Welcome back to the seventh rule with Sorok Lofton.
Hello, hello.
This is the free-for-all, everybody. So here they come, fast and furious. Anil O. Palat is in Guatemala right now.
Woo-hoo. Woo-hoo.
Hello. Hola, hola.
We have Susan V. Gruner hanging out in the Arctic somewhere. We have Tierney C. Deekman over here as well. Hey. Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel is wondering what we're going to say about her. Nothing.
Oh, watched out this time.
he looked so like worried. Like, what's he gonna say? Melissa Longo is also here in a runabout.
Not telling where I'm going.
Ooh. Stay tuned. Well, we're talking about season six. We just flew through all of the episodes. So how about this? Sue, do you want to talk about season six as a whole or a specific episode? Or do you just want to say what your three favorite episodes were this season and why?
I can't give you three episodes that were my favorites. There is so much that happened this season from the beginning to the end, which I hated, but I really liked, in general, I liked the whole thing. I disagreed with the people that said that some of the episodes were the worst episodes ever. No, they were not the worst episodes ever. But some of them were borderline. But in general, I can't say anything bad because I love the show so much. It's really difficult to say anything negative. So I won't. But you know that something is coming. It's getting intense towards the end of the season.
Sue, is this your favorite Deep Space Nine season ever?
No. I think my favorite would be the first season.
Whoa.
We really kind of get to know everybody, but I don't know. You know, I can remember when it first came out, a friend of mine and I would watch it together on the phone. And we would say that Kira was on cocaine.
Right.
Okay. We thought she was so intense, but she mellowed out so well. And of course we figured out later, well, she had PTSD. And she's one of my, God, they're all my favorite characters. I can't say that I have a favorite because I love them all. This what's so great about this show is that it's the depth of the characters for every single one was deep. Mm. It was really, really deep. And you love every one of them. The ones that you're supposed to hate, I love hating them.
Yeah.
You know, I love hating Ducat. I love hating Kai Winn. It's just so much. They're just so great. They just, it's such a great show. I'll shut up.
Wait,
now.
Somebody, people hate Ducat?
A love hate relationship.
What kind of world are we living in where people don't like Ducat?
And Kai Winn. Oh, man. Plus, I know what's coming.
Oh gosh.
Anil O'Palat out in Guatemala, do you have some favorite episodes, any takeaways from this season? Is this your favorite season of Deep Space Nine ever?
I was just thinking about that, and I don't know if it's my favorite. It's so hard to say because each season kind of starts somewhere and then you get left somewhere else. And then you're like, what's going to happen next season? You know, there's like a clear sort of evolution. And I don't know, this one is bittersweet because we lose Jadzia.
Yeah.
And we know the end, you know, the last season is upon us, but so many like things have been set up. And I can't believe like Ducat was, I just always think about him walking around. I think it was like season one or two when his program takes over the station and he's just walking around like he owns the place while that thing is shooting phasers out of the replimat. And I'm like, that guy is now turning into the big bad of the entire show, you know? And so, I don't know if it's my favorite. It does have some of the best episodes, I gotta say, but maybe fifth season or fourth season, probably. I enjoy.
By the way, everybody, speaking of enjoyment, Anil here, you can also find him online at Fox Nomad. He has a YouTube channel. Check out how cool this thing is. He's got 14,000 subscribers already. Anil right now is like 14,200. And he's out traveling the world and giving advice. Look how cool. Okay.
Oh my God.
Wow. Like,
that
okay.
is so cool.
Actually,
look,
Anil.
Abyssinian kiosk shirt.
I didn't know Ryan was going to do this.
Yeah, right there. There it is. Okay, first of all.
No, two. Sorry.
First of all, just real quick, Anil. You're the only person that might be able to answer this. My entire life, I grew up pronouncing the capital of Ukraine, Kiev, right? Suddenly, there's some invasion that happens a month or two ago. And everybody's going, and the invasion in Kyiv, and here we are live in Kyiv. And I'm like, it's Kiev. Hey, it's Kiev. And I see now you have a video. Rather than watching the video right now, everybody can watch it a little later. Can you tell me, why is everybody calling it Kyiv instead of Kiev all of a sudden?
I was wondering the same thing. So I talked to an expert about it because I wasn't sure. And so Kiev is the Russian pronunciation. And Kyiv, I think, is how it's said in Ukrainian. And so because it's been on the news so much, the Ukrainians want it pronounced the Ukrainian way as opposed to the Russian way. And the spelling also, that's why it's changed. But Kyiv is wrong and Kiev is the Russian way. So both are wrong. It's kind of a double syllable there.
It's Kyiv.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I don't quite recall. I always have to like listen back to hear how this lady says it just to make sure I get it right. But it's kind of like two syllables, like Kyiv.
Okay, so what that means right now, I think you just made me more confused. So everybody, you got to go watch his video because in his video, he's going to explain it. Go to Fox Nomad on YouTube. I think it's just youtube.com/Fox Nomad. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, but that's how you spell it. and then just click on that video. You'll learn something. I think that's really cool, this channel you're doing, Anil. I think that's awesome. Just found out about it a few days ago. Good work. That's great stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Melissa Longo, how do you pronounce the capital? No, do you have a favorite Deep Space Nine season? What are your favorite episodes of the sixth season?
I was going to pronounce it wrong because I don't know how to pronounce it right now. I have to echo what Sue and Anil said, and it's difficult to choose one episode that's a favorite, because there's so many good, strong episodes in this season that push the story along and help flesh out the characters even more than they already, you know, have been. And I love this show because it feels so like I am so invested in this universe. You know, I am so invested in Deep Space Nine and the people who live there. And even if they're not on screen or as an active part of the story, they're still included in the story, like Keiko or like Shakar. Or, you know, there's always this continuity that pulls the story along. So, totally.
Hang on a second. I just want to say that I'll bet anybody $10 right now that Anne Marie is looking up Anil on YouTube. Look at.
No.
Yeah, she is. She's looking down at her phone going like, I've got to see this.
Only
video.
Because, okay, well, I had already subscribed the second you said it, but now I'm on to the podcast subscription.
Nice. I knew it.
Associated podcast.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, Melissa. Please continue.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going.
Do you have some favorite episodes?
I was thinking really quickly how great Melissa's hair looks. looking awesome today. Very beautiful.
Thank
good
you.
Hair.
Well, thanks. Love it.
True. True.
No, I try not to turn red. Thank you. Favorite episodes. Like the very, I don't know. There's so many that like the first.
Oh, well, what about Far Beyond the Stars? I'm just looking.
Well, yeah, but I was going to say the first story arc when the Dominion takes over the station and then gets forced out. What a great way to, you know, I don't know. It was great storytelling, and I loved all of that whole sequence. And then Magnificent Ferengi was amazing, and Far Beyond the Stars, of course, and then In the Pale Moonlight, and
Honor Among Thieves.
Yeah, there's just so many to, you know, there's so many good ones that. I'm invested, and season six isn't my favorite. Well, maybe it is I don't know if it's my favorite season because His Way is in there and Kira and Odo finally got together. So I was like, yay!
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if I have a favorite season.
Cool. What's Ryan doing? Oh, he's
Ryan, we can't hear you.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Sorry. I Googled it. It says Kiev on how to pronounce Right. So
that's
it says
the Russian pronunciation.
No, it says American pronunciation
here.
That's
how Americans were pronouncing it until like last month.
Right, exactly. So then I go, ooh, it's got a little drop-down box. So let's find the Ukrainian pronunciation, right? And it goes American or British. Okay, that doesn't help.
Wait, what is a birthday, though?
Next, it's going to be like Australian pronunciation, you know, Irish pronunciation. Yeah. Same, Kiev.
All right.
Anyway, whatever. Moving on. Dr. Anne Marie Siegel, how do you pronounce Kiev? I mean, what's your favorite season?
You know what? I might I don't know. I can't choose a favorite, but when people ask me, I usually say six, because you get Vic Fontaine and you have like Dax and Worf together for the whole season, basically. And even though it ends tragically, and then also you have his weight, which is my favorite of all the episodes. So yeah, all of that together. Plus, like, you don't have the stress of it only once. Like, Seven is so good, but the whole time you're watching Seven, you're like depressed because it's the last season. Much of it is my favorite because I love the Vic Fontaine and like Nog episodes, but and I mean everybody's fantastic, but yeah, the whole season I'm depressed that I'm gonna have to go back to season one soon.
Don't listen
my
to her
never ends. My re- no my watch never ends, so and there's so much music in season seven, so like seven is great, but because six isn't the last one, that's why six gets my vote.
Do you have favorite episodes this season?
Yeah, it's obviously His Way, and then also You Are Cordially Invited, Elf of Magnificent Ferengi. Change of Heart is like so freaking good.
So everything about relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I really love them all. Yeah, exactly. They're my favorite.
There are so many good ones. Really good.
So many cute moments.
Out of the park.
Is there an episode that you would skip on a rewatch of this season?
Oh, that's a really good question. I almost never skip any for DC Sign. I mean, One Little Ship, I can sort of take or leave sometimes because it gets a little tedious.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't love episodes where people get
One Little Ship.
I love that one.
But, I love it. Me too.
It has so many cute little moments. So, you know, like I wouldn't want to skip anything.
However, when you asked that question, Siroc, Melissa nodded her head. Oh, there's something you'd like to share with the rest of us, Melissa?
The one that I probably would skip is Time's Orphan.
I agree.
The noises are so annoying when someone's off. I'm like, I like to while I'm like doing other stuff. Yeah, exactly. But also only because it's also like so.
It's pretty good.
Oh my god.
So what Siroc is saying is they should have cast him as adult Molly.
When I'm thinking,
she came back as a black dude. I don't know what's
going on. What I'm thinking is we need to do a remake of Caveman.
Right?
1980. Caveman. Ringo Starr, John Matuszak, Shelley Long. What's that guy's name with the
Dennis Quaid?
Thank you. Yeah. Anyway.
Whoa.
Tierney right now is like, I don't know where they just went. I just want to talk about Star Trek. So, Tierney, what do you think about Deep Space Nine season six? Do you have some favorite episodes? Do you think this is the best season of Deep Space Nine?
I would definitely have to say that everything that Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel said echoes everything in my head. It's like a half and half favorite season, but kind of depressing because, you know, you're going on to season seven and things are going to end and things get really dark. And I always feel like it's nearing the end credits when you start getting into the late seasons of a Star Trek watch through, because pretty much by the time I end a watch through of the series, it's time to restart them again. I'll be maybe cliche at this point. Far Beyond the Stars is my favorite episode, period. You know, followed by In the Pale Moonlight. So two favorite episodes here. Like I was saying when we did Tears of the Prophets, if I put together a top 10, I would probably put Sound of Her Voice in there. Then probably a few others too, if I really looked at it, or at least parts of others. I would say this is, other than, well, the last season, clearly, the most, maybe even the most poignant season of the Next Generation era Star Trek series, given what happens. I mean, we get them retaking the station. We get introductions of some really serious new things. We get Vic. We get Section 31 to the Star Trek franchise. We get some really raucous-ass space battles, which, you know, are just in the series alone. It's one thing we start to see them in the movies, but they really come through in DS9 and the series more than anything. And they're fun to watch. They're great. And I love watching them way more in DS9 than some of the new Trek stuff. We get the death of Zial. That's holy crap. Then we have Dukat going from his charismatic self that you've got your online crowd starting to say, well, Dukat did nothing wrong, you know, kind of thing, to he reveals himself to be his true space Hitler, or, well, I won't put this in modern terms, but we all know what he is in modern terms today. And there's some nuts things. Paw Wraiths come out to play.
In the form of Jake Sisko.
Also, why when Costamogen, because it is confirmed that it was Costamogen that was in Dukat that killed Jadzia as well. Oh. Why didn't he just do his temple bullshit while he was in Jake? If he can just go and knock out all the orbs, why didn't he just skitter off?
See, that guy is a jerk.
Jake should have been one of the first people off of the station during the evacuation, but somehow stayed behind while he was inhabited by Costamogen. During that time, couldn't he have just zooped into the temple and done that? He had to wait until Dukat found his party cracker full of Paw Wraith.
Because he thought that he would win the reckoning. But when that didn't work, he had to choose a different route.
I suppose it just seems like that would have been the easier way to go. But I guess when you've got that kind of ego and pseudo omnipotence, you know, you don't care at that point. You just want to have fun, I guess. But just one of those things. But then we have many other things. We go back to Red Squad, and they get their asses handed to them, which is unfortunate. But there's another thing we come back around to, and then at least Jake and Nog, through extremely astronomical odds, probably the least likely thing to happen in all of Star Trek, in all of space, are found floating in a pod randomly.
And they're the only ones that survive too.
Yeah, that and the moon chick. Like, I don't, it's unbelievable. And then of course we do have a few episodes that we could have done without. Time's Orphan.
Impossible.
Hard skip. We don't need all the O'Briens to suffer, but somebody did. Berman. Maybe. And then Prophet and Lace. Prophet and Lace. It's a good Ferengi possibly episode, but at least we get Magnificent Ferengi. So there's a lot in this season. There's a lot. If I were to pick a favorite, yeah, it would be six, just because it has so much. And if I want to get really particular, it's not my favorite, because leading up to seven, I know what's going to happen. It's going to get dark. It's going to get sad. It's already dark and sad, but we have more in this season than any other. And it's, you can't say that for any other series, at least not so far, not in these new series, not even in TNG.
Yeah. I was going to say this kind of stuff, these kinds of seasons are never going to happen again, because you have 26 episodes with which to work. And nowadays you have 8 to 13, you know,
half seasons,
and everything likes to be super serialized.
I really like the bad episodes of older Star Trek.
Totally. Because you're getting more. You're getting something that you're never going to get nowadays, you know, which is
they don't have room for it nowadays. They can't do the fun episodes. If they do, it takes out, you know, a huge percentage of that, where this, they can do that. They can even take a fan script and say, you know, this sounds fun. We really like this. Let's make it. Why not? It's yep. one out of this many episodes and have fun and take a chance. Like they did that with Profit and Lace. It didn't really work out in the end, but they still took a chance and did that episode. Could have been much more meaningful, but still they could, if they couldn't do that now. They couldn't. It would
well, back crash. Then,
well, exactly. You could do it with short treks and things like that.
That's a good point. You don't have to.
I mean,
but the fact that they have to create something entirely new and different and separate to even get away with that now,
but
sad for television, honestly. Yeah,
but I don't think a dilemma, an overall arcing dilemma, has to be solved in one season. Why not use the entire all seasons to solve a problem rather than having to wrap it up, you know, immediately on the last season? And
I mean, they still did that with DS9. They had to get Bajor into the Federation. They had to solve what the Cardassians were still
exactly.
doing. They did that with everything as well. And I think that's what makes DS9, to me at least, it is what makes it my favorite of the series, is they still had this overarching thing. They didn't pull Alien of the Week, and they still had the, you know, individual episodes as well as the overarching story throughout the entire thing. The writing, the character development, everything of what makes it so phenomenal, and what makes people who prefer Alien of the Week, Star Trek, not like it, is what makes us prefer it, at least to me. But
what do you guys prefer, Alien of the Week or Serialized?
Well, I don't think there has to be a choice between either. There's a way to work in an Alien of the Week.
I was just wondering what you prefer. Not we don't have to choose, luckily. We have all the choices in the world. I was just wondering if you like that better, because I thought I liked Serialized better when I saw the way Deep Space Nine did it. But then now that we get it a lot in the new Star Trek, you kind of start going, I like the Alien of the Week too. You know, you kind of start.
Yeah, sometimes it's nice to just pick an episode, like, you know, be it at home in Chicago with my father. She's got regular TV. We don't have that here. We just stream everything. It's like, oh, BBC's got Next Gen on. Cool. And it's just like, I remember this episode, and then it ends. And it's nice that it ends. And you can't do that as much with DS9. You can't play a random episode. So often, especially not when it comes to a lot of season 6 and season 7 and even some of season 5. But in a way, that's also why it's trending again. It's binging era. People can just watch.
Actually, that reminds me, Anil, I know you have to leave probably right now. If you do have to go, do you have any preference of serialized versus more episodic or standalone episodes, bottle episodes?
I guess if it's going to be serialized, you need kind of goals, right? Like if it's only 10 episodes and serialized, a lot of the series now, they work like everything gets revealed at the very, very end. So you don't have those like in Deep Space Nine, we see, you know, sort of Sisko's journey to becoming, well, you know, with the prophets, and then same thing with Dukat. We get these kind of goalposts in the story. So it's serialized, but we get answers and new mysteries. Whereas I think when the season is shorter, it's one big mystery and they can't really answer too many questions ahead of time. And so at the end result is bad. Like if the story, you know, if the whatever the mystery box is, you get to the end of the season and it's not good, then it kind of ruins the whole season. So that's, I think it's riskier. I think it's riskier. So I guess I do like it. If I had to pick, I'd go Alien of the Week, because you get more depth from the characters and the story. And if there's a bad episode, you can just skip it. It doesn't ruin the whole season, you know? So yeah, I guess I'm going Alien of the Week.
Great
point. Longer seasons.
Great point. Do you have to run? You said before we hit record that you may have to leave early.
I do, actually. Okay. Yeah, I should probably.
Well, we're going to talk more about what you just brought up. But thanks for joining us, Anil, out in Guatemala.
Cool. Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really interesting that if you you can take these chances, you can gamble all you want when you have 26 episodes and do whatever you want. You're like, oh, you don't like this one? No problem. Tune in next week. You'll probably like the next one, you know? But if an entire season is one storyline and you didn't like it, like you said, it kind of just poops on all of the episodes you just saw, right?
So why not create a storyline that arches over an entire show rather than a season?
Ooh, that's even bigger gamble.
They did it with Game of Thrones
and Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, it's and Game of Thrones didn't have 26 episodes a season to play with either.
Anne-Marie, did you just say Babylon 5? Hey, everybody, you guys, Anna Post is joining us. What a deal.
Anna.
So, Anna, you showed up just in time. Anil just left. We only have a few minutes left. We're talking about season 6, the whole season in review. Two questions for you. Do you think seasons, they're easy questions. What was the name of the Romulan senator in episode 4 of season? No. If we said in the pale moonlight, you'd be like Vrenak, but anybody else, who knows? Do you have any favorite episodes of season 6? And is season 6 your favorite Deep Space Nine episode?
The whole season, my favorite episode.
Ooh,
sorry, favorite season.
Your favorite episode.
I'm not very good at what I do.
Season 6 has so many great episodes. I mean, all of like, I'm in the pale moonlight, obviously. Change of heart, far beyond. Like they're just all of like the real great. I mean, the visitor isn't, but a majority of like amazing episodes are in season 6. Do you think it's really good?
It's kind of mean almost. They give you 6 seasons of really fabulous, and then in 7, it's like they're saying, okay, F you, we're out of here.
No spoilers.
No more Deep Space Nine for you.
Wow.
We wanted 10 seasons or 12 seasons or forever seasons.
Forever seasons, I like.
Forever seasons.
I think Marani was just about to join us, maybe not. Well, everybody, I think that's about it for us. Oh, Marani, there you are. So you're a tiny bit early for the next thing, but we wanted to bring you in real quick because we're talking about season 6 of Deep Space Nine as a whole. Do you have a couple favorite episodes or 3 favorite episodes? And if so, or if not, is season 6 the best Deep Space Nine episode? Season.
I can't ever pick a favorite of anything. I mean, other than Deep Space Nine itself as a whole.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah.
That's well, fair. That's understandable. Sirach, do you have any final thoughts on the 6th season?
One, I like the growth of Nog's character. We get to see him kind of going from Cadet Nog to being on the Defiant and, you know, instrumental to a lot of these episodes. I love his growth. I thought Garrick also had a very good season this year, a couple of moments that he shined. And then my answer to the question about Alien of the Week versus, you know, these long storylines. I think what I find special about Deep Space Nine is that they're not only doing the Alien of the Week or the serialized storytelling, but they're also giving you certain moral questions that you have to, that are underlying in the story. So with Valiant, it was about, you know, being cocky and overconfident, you know, or it was about, you know, the addiction, the Ketracel White addiction that the Jemadar had. It was, you know, it was about, a women's liberation in the, for the Ferengi community. Even if they didn't achieve all of the goals they tried, they always kind of, at least for the most part, had these underlying themes that dealt with topics that were not so clear cut and question your morality, question the decisions you made. And as long as they continue to do that, it doesn't matter to me whether it is an alien of the week or if it's a serialized, if they're talking about racism like they did in Far Beyond the Stars, or they're talking about Kira going back to kill her mother because she had a relationship with Dukat. Like, these are really kind of thought-provoking issues that you would say, is that right to do, or is it not right to do, or puts things into perspective. And for me, that's what makes Deep Space Nine so good, because it's not just a story and it's not just a serialization, but it's also those underlying questions of morality, of what's right, what's wrong, and the kind of tough decisions that people are put in. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
And also kind of like, I think, Polly, you can talk more about it after the after you finish all seven episodes or seven seasons.
See, it's not that easy to say, is it?
But how like Deep Space Nine, more than any other show, I mean, occasionally Voyager and TNG would do it a bit, but like, you have one episode in one season, and later on you'll touch on it again, kind of like Dr. Bashir, I presume, and then statistical probabilities, and maybe another episode in the future. And there's kind of like arcs for like even three episodes over the whole show, which I feel like it's kind of rare to get, where you just pick up every few seasons on something. So that's another like really special part, especially when shows go on this long.
Cool.
I like how they use their families too. Like, it's not just, it might be just sort of more of a one-off episode, but it's Moogie getting kidnapped, or it's Martok's wife not liking Jadzia.
Right.
Like, they use the background and they bring in these characters' families throughout DS9, but it's especially in like season 6 and 7 to tell these moralities and tell the story, but also give you the background of the characters. And I like how they bring in pieces of their family and their history and the extended universe to tell those.
Yeah. And also like, it almost starts feeling more like real life, because when you hang out with like friends or coworkers, you see their family like once a year, or like once every couple of years.
Hopefully.
And in Deep Space Nine, because you only see like everybody's, you'll see like Joe Sisko occasionally every year or two. It kind of feels like actual real life. Like, that is how often like people's families stop by. It's really cool.
That's a great place to stop, because that's exactly where we ended things for season 6, was at the Joseph Sisko restaurant extraordinaire. And we can't wait for season 7. Well, we can and we will, but not very long. So I think that's about it for us. Thank you, Sue, for joining us. Melissa, Dr. Anne-Marie, Tierney, Anna, Marani. Marani's like, I didn't even know I was really joining you. But thank you all very much. Sirach, this is it. We are going into season 7. It's going to be nuts. And then we're going to be sad that it's over. But for now, we're going to enjoy the hell out of it. Thank you all very much. And until next time, everybody, always remember the 7th rule.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.